What's up, guys? This is your host, as always, Brian Lubin, coming back to you live and in color on another Monday morning. What I am doing on this show is sometimes, since we are doubling literally every single month, we have a lot of new people coming in. I am sprinkling some of the older episodes into the new feed so that everybody else can start listening to these. So I only will do this with episodes that are valuable enough to at least be listened to twice. So you hear me mention January a couple times in the episode. That's why, without any further ado, I'm going to let this man start speaking some fire, Aaron Amuchastegui.
We had made millions of dollars and had nothing to show for it. And at that time, we realized the only things that like we didn't lose in that were some of the memories of some of the stuff we did. We said, I wish we would have gone on more trips, because now that we've lost it all, the stuff that we bought is worthless.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
What's up? What's up? Hello for the first timer. Welcome back to another episode of the Action Academy Podcast, bringing you the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who have already earned their freedom so that you can earn freedom in your life and business today. Now, I know it's still January, so I know a lot of people are cold out there and they needed some warmth, so I just had to bring another episode of Absolute Heat today with my buddy, Aaron Amuchastegui. Aaron is actually on a lot of real estate podcasts for his courthouse step method of acquiring homes. He essentially would wait for them to go into foreclosure and then buy them at a discount over and over and over again, buying hundreds of homes this way. And so he's really big in the real estate investing community. But today, I really wanted to go deep into his different interests outside of just real estate. So yes, in today's episode, you can learn how to make hundreds of thousands of dollars per month in income through the methods that he literally used. You can copy and paste them. He has a book on this. But we're also going to go into in this episode is how he is able to travel around the world with his wife and kids and take them out of school. It's called the 5-hour school week that him and his wife created. And so that's a really cool, interesting subject. We also talk about how he's a biohacker, a life hacker, and an Ironman athlete. And he goes into all these different tips, tricks, and strategies that he uses to be able to reduce his biological age. Yeah, I said it, reduce it. So he's literally aging backwards. What the hell, right? And so along with all of this, you get all of this information and then also Aaron's story about how he made it to the mountaintop, made millions of dollars, lost it all, almost lost his family in the process, and then figured out how to pull it all back together and then go 10 times further than he had before. So this episode is raw. This episode is powerful. And as always, if you get any value from this show, can you please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and share this with a friend or family member? Now let's get to it. Aaron Amuchastegui. Aaron Amuchastegui, 4K on the screen. What is up, my brother?
What's up, man? You nailed my last name. And then I look at yours and I'm like, so is it Lubin? Is it Lubin? And am I gonna screw this up or not?
It is. That's actually going to be one of my jokes out to the gate. Is I was like, I have a doozy of a last name, but we have Mr. Amuchastegui come in and it just rolls off the tongue.
You had to practice that. What a fun way to come chat, dude. When you reached out to get on here and talk, we talked a bit online. We got to play some volleyball together out in Colorado. Yeah, good times this summer and so fun. What are we going to chat about, dude? What do you got going on?
I've got a list here that we can rock and roll on, but it's funny for people listening. I actually use you as an example of how weird my brain works with podcasts that I listen to that I'm interested in. And I hope for you listening that this is one of the podcasts for you. But you were on a podcast before. I couldn't tell you what episode it was or what show it was. And you mentioned something about Kalina in the 5-hour work week. And I remembered it. And because I was so interested by it when I heard it. And then so when I met you, I don't even know if you remember any of this. So it's like I meet you, we're going to play volleyball at the Steamboat Go Abundance event. I'm like, hey, how's that 5-hour school week thing going with Kalina? And you're like, you're probably like, who the hell is this guy?
I tell you what, man, that stuff never gets old and it's super fun. I went to the chiropractor yesterday, a guy I hadn't been to before. And afterward, he finishes getting me all set up and he said, hey, I want, and it was a place I normally go, but not a guy I usually see. And I'm like, oh, you've probably set me before. It's fine. And afterward he goes, no, I haven't, but here's how I know. I've read your book. I've read you and your wife's book. I love what you guys are doing. I'm like, you guys are awesome. And he's like, I know all about you. So I was like, oh, I'm sure you've probably been my chiropractor before. And he was like, no, I know that I haven't been. So I love it when people reach out. I love it when people say, hey, I've read the book. Hey, because yes, we've talked about it on the podcast. It was a big part of how we became who we are and fun stuff. So no, you just by you knowing that, dude, you were instantly like an extra level of friendship right there. It's like instant friends, man. It's perfect.
Yeah. And then we just crushed volleyball. We had some Top Gun music playing in the background. We had dog tags flying around.
Dude, great. I felt like we needed, if we ever did a volleyball tournament, dog tags would be like one of the things everybody would have to wear. Like you got to wear dog tags when you do it.
An absolute necessity. So to begin the show, we'll go into your backstory. We'll go into your story and we'll take it there. But it's actually funny because your Instagram bio interests me so much that I think that this is like just a fun way to be able to begin this show and introduce all this audience to you. So if you go on Aaron Amuchastegui's, and I'm going to keep saying his name over and over again, because now I'm proud of myself for being able to pronounce it correctly. You go on his Instagram, here's his bio. I'm going to take the emojis out of it because he's got emojis in there like crazy, but he's got travelpreneur, Iron Man, life hacker, flipped 1,000, own 450, best-selling author, husband, homeschool dad, super wife, 5-hour school week, CEO. Let's go, brother.
The reason you need all those emojis, so people like you flipped 1,000, you got your little houses in there, you got all your stuff, you got the life of an entrepreneur, the trying to figure out, like, that's one challenge or one thing that's funny with like online stuff. Like you're like, do your elevator pitch. You got 30 seconds to tell me all about your life. You're like, if anyone's lived a big life, like 30 seconds isn't enough time for an elevator pitch or a company or a business or anything. So you got to be ready with your elevator pitch, your 30 seconds of who you are. And I think it's so tough to narrow that down into 30 days, but I took some of my favorite stuff about me tried to cram it in there.
I feel that travelpreneur, I want to start there because you put it first. And I feel like that it was either intentional or it was subconsciously intentional. Talk to me on this, travelpreneur. How have you set your life up to be able to travel? And what does this look like for you?
The travelpreneur. So, man, part of our story, 2009 to 2012, I'm like a new business guy. I'm flipping houses, flipping foreclosures. We found a niche nobody was in, a business nobody was in. We found like huge, made huge money really fast. And I didn't have any mentors. Nobody taught me how to do anything. And so when I was making that money, I was new money. And so we were stupid with it. We wasted it. We didn't invest it. We thought that we were like such miracles. It was going to last forever. But 2012, 2013, we lost it all. And we went from, and my marriage was in shambles and our family was in shambles. And there were so many things in that moment where we were like, man, we blew a big opportunity. We had made millions of dollars and had nothing to show for it. And at that time, we realized the only things that like we didn't lose in that were some of the memories of some of the stuff we did. We said, I wish we would have gone on more trips because now that we've lost it all, the stuff that we bought is worthless. The other things that we spent money on is worthless. The gifts we gave people, there's so much stuff that we wasted money on, but we knew the stuff we didn't waste money on was the experiences. And we said, man, if we ever got a chance to do it again, we would do it way different and we'd focus on experiences over things. And we had a year or two of just straight struggle of going from like, how do you go from making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month to like applying for a job to be a building inspector and an Uber driver? That was a rough little time. You know, grace of God, 2015, had a new opportunity, come up with real estate and essentially got that second chance. So I was buying foreclosures in 2009 in California. When I started that, nobody was there. So that was why my opportunity was big. We were the first into this industry that nobody had discovered yet. In 2015, I get out to Texas, a small town in Texas. I show up at an auction and nobody's there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like California 2009. I got my second chance to redo my business. And we went really big on honoring that if we had another chance. That's when we started the 5-hour school week. We pulled our kids out of school and we started doing this thing called like world schooling and traveling, where we started trying to go all over and going to, sometimes it's really fun places like London and Iceland and like sleeping in the igloos, looking at the Northern Lights and stuff. And other times it was like Haiti and Cuba and sleeping in these really kind of sketchy places so your kids would see both sides of it. The way I make my money today is real estate, right? The way that we set up a lot of it is rentals and long-term real estate type stuff that creates what we call horizontal income in our GoBundance Mastermind. I made a lot of fast money, but so your question was, how can I actually go travel? So my long answer either, but 2009 to 2012, I was a house flipper. I was making lots of money, but the day I stopped buying houses, I stopped making money. Mm-hmm. In 2015, I was like, man, I sure screwed that up. If I'd have just kept 100 of those houses, I'd have been set for life. So in 2015, I started buying houses out. I would fly out to Texas every month for 3 days. I would drive houses. I'd go to auction. I'd buy like 10 houses a month. We would turn them into rentals and they were very boring. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to make big flipping money anymore, but I'll turn it into a rental. I'll put a loan on. I'll make $100 a month per house. It was very boring. And the next month I said, prices will never go up in Texas. And the next month I did it again. I bought 10 more houses. The next month I did it again. I bought 10 more houses. I kept putting loans on it and cycling that through and did that since 2015. And so that long-term horizontal income is how we can actually travel and run businesses and buy some of the other businesses that we like to run now. And then with COVID, like anybody that invested heavy in real estate or heavy in real estate in Texas in 2015, 2016, 2017, 2020 and 2021, it felt like we hit the lottery. We got really lucky on some of those bets. And yeah, we don't get to travel enough right now, Brian. Like the pre-COVID, we were gone 2-3 weeks a month. Like mm-hmm. we used to spend 2 months a year in Hawaii and we haven't been back to Hawaii since COVID hit. We've just now started to like get to go experience some stuff again. But it's been a rough shift from going places 2-3 weeks every month to not going hardly. And no, we're not going anywhere exotic right now. It's too hard to get anywhere. You never know what's going to happen. It's been the toughest part about COVID, really.
Yeah. It's definitely been a wild ride, but I'm hopeful after watching this Omicron variant for people listening. It's like early January, 2022. Omicron seems like a bad cold for most people, but yeah, the reason I asked you this and for people listening, I didn't tell Aaron the show format, so we're just going off the rip. But for the show format, Aaron, is we kind of like to start the first half of the show, and what it's evolved into is talking about why we do everything. And in the back half of the show, we'll talk about business, maybe more of the metrics, the analytical part. So we'll talk about the courthouse steps and your methodologies behind doing that and how you crushed it there, because that's a really unique niche to your point. I want to talk to you a little bit more about the 5-hour books that you and your wife are doing and talk a little bit more about this and like your lifestyle design before we get into the business part, because the money is awesome. But like you said, like you went through it, you made fast money, you lost it. But what stayed were the memories. And I know that now you have the kids and everything that you're growing and that you're raising. And so that's a huge part of your life. So can you talk to us a little bit about the 5-hour school week and some of the stuff that you and Kalina are doing with that?
And that why is the big part. Look at my son is What's joining up, buddy? Us for a second. Brax, you say hi. You're live on
What's a podcast, up, brother?
Buddy. Yeah, buddy.
Hey.
Hey, say hi to my buddy. That's Brian. Say hi, Brian.
You want, say
you,
hi, Brian.
There during podcasts. You can't be shy. You got to say hi. Everybody loves meeting you. There he is.
Say hi, everybody.
You come this way. Say hi, everybody, in the mic.
Say hi, everybody.
Yell it.
Hi.
Hi.
And this right, is what can I help you with, everyone. Sir?
See you, buddy.
Hi. All right. Yeah, now he can see you. Dude, that's why.
Yeah.
Right there. What an awesome timing for my son to come join me. So the why behind why we do what we do, so much of it is, dude, we grow up thinking life is going to be something certain, right? Like mm-hmm. you're supposed to go to school and go to college and get a job and have the kids and you get to retire later. And there was a few big things that impacted us. So one was about 5 years ago, we had done really well. Mm-hmm. And then we had lost it. Part of when we were doing really well though, my wife and I weren't getting along really well. We had gotten pretty cocky. She was my broker. I was running the business. We were a lot of the times it was like, this is my money. I can do what I want. This is your money. When it started, when we were struggling and we couldn't pay our rent and she was a waitress at the casino and I was working two jobs, like we were in the foxhole together and we were like, we were a team. And then when we got really successful, we stopped being a team and we started getting this, like this ego part of who we are. So when we ended up losing all the businesses, we didn't just all of a sudden go from a lot of income to none. Our marriage was also like in shambles. We had nannies raising our kids for the prior couple of years because we were so busy working. We just thought that was the way we were supposed to do it. Yeah, both spouses work, nannies raise the kids. And we went into that and we were like, whoa, like we were wrecked. And we had a lot of time to think about what went wrong, what went right, where our regrets are, and again, and how we would do it different. And so much of that was like, man, I wish we would have spent, essentially when we had all those opportunities, I wish we'd have spent more time with our kids. I wish we'd done more things with our kids. And so that was a big part of the first part of the why was when you almost lose it, when you're picturing like your family splitting up and you're going to be doing Christmases apart and things like that, it makes you really, for me, it really made me so grateful. Like every time I get to sit with them at Christmas, like half my gratitude is like, there were times I was picturing I wasn't going to be able to be with you on Christmas morning. And now I get to be here. And right around that same time too, when I rediscovered the market, my dad died and he died of pancreatic cancer. He died at like 64 years old, really early, really young for what he was supposed to and out of nowhere. And he hadn't retired yet. He was about to retire. That was the year he was supposed to go spend a few months in Hawaii. And so he died with money in the bank while he was still working. And he could have retired years earlier and so many years earlier. And he had all the, he got to go live a lot of life and he did go on some vacations and things. But really all of his biggest vacations he was planning to do, they were supposed to happen with that year.
Another day,
year or two after he died. And so I found myself too going, man, I don't want that to be me. So tomorrow isn't promised, right? So tomorrow isn't promised. You have to live for today. You have to put stuff on the calendar today because you never know what's going to happen. I might go to business tomorrow. I might lose everything tomorrow. We might lose a family member tomorrow. So when we have these like bucket list items that we put on our vision boards, it's more about putting it on the calendar to try to do it now. So that's what started this like adventure type stuff. And so we started doing that adventure stuff of because we had these kind of things that shocked us to the core. We had a lot of regrets and said, let's not have regrets. Let's go create as many memories as we can, especially with our kids while they're young, while they still like us, while they won't say no anymore. They can't tell us no. Like in a couple, yeah. I mean, they tell us no, but like we could go on a trip. They can't really stop themselves. In a couple of years, they'll get to decide whether or not they want to hang out with us anymore. So we're like, we're going to force them to do a bunch of fun stuff with us. During that time, we were actually, some of our first events was like going to some Fambundance events. It's a branch of GoBundance that was early starting. Us and a couple other families were starting this idea of what if we taught these mastermind ideas to our kids. One of the guys that spoke at one of the events, the guy named Jim Shields, and he had a book called The Family Board Meeting. And that Family Board Meeting book, he talked about like his education matrix. And in a nutshell, one of the things he talked about was everything you need to learn in life, you can't learn in school. The most important lessons, he would tell you to ask yourself, like, biggest thing you ever had to get through, what was your toughest moment? And what skill set did you learn, did you have to use to get through that moment? And was it a skill set you learned? And everybody was like, no, it wasn't. I didn't solve that toughest moment with math. So he has a bunch of things in there like healthy risk taking and how to develop relationships. So that was our first questioning of, wait, maybe the school system could be a little bit different. And as we were doing more and more adventure, we were pulling our kids out of school more and more. We were starting to see some of the pressures and the stuff that they were going through. Like our 7-year-old, like crying, like doing a couple hours of homework every night. And at the time we thought there was no better way. So we just did it. And so we'd be like, tough stuff. Like life is tough. You just do the hard stuff. And then in some of those moments of us re-questioning, like maybe we should do stuff a little different now, we started to say, maybe we don't have to do the hard stuff. Or maybe we don't have to do it that way just because we always have. There's so many things I think we do in life because people always have. So we don't question it. We say, we can go ahead and like, why are we going to do it this way? Because people have always done it that way. Like technology disruptors are the ones that say, maybe we don't have to do it. Maybe we don't have to get a cab. Maybe we can do a different way. Maybe we can have somebody else come pick me up in their car. Like Uber gets created because people are trying to be disruptors. And then there was a couple pivotal moments. So on one of our moments, we were taking our kids out of school and traveling, coming back. We were starting to have more of these experiences, but it was always a bit of a drag to go back. Also, because like when we would go to Florida, we'd go spend time in aquariums and doing all these like things where they're learning about, you know, ecosystems and all sorts of stuff in the world. And And then we're going, hey, they're learning about life. They're learning about entrepreneurship. They're learning about the stuff that's important to us. We did a trip to Yosemite, which is just a 2-hour drive from Sacramento where we lived at the time. And when we got there, I was planning to work and my daughter's planning to do her homework. It was like, I had booked it like a year earlier for like a really good discount. So we're like, we're just going to go do it. But we got there and we didn't have any internet or phone access. Just the way that it was, the place where we were staying, there was no internet, no phone access. And my daughter had forgot to bring her homework. So all of us were a little stressed out, like those first few hours. What are we going to do? And then we got to the point, we said, you know what? There's nothing we can do about it. Let's just enjoy Yosemite. And it was like the most amazing week, the most amazing week. Hiking and seeing waterfalls, like going on all these ranger talks, learning about artists, like learning from like mountain climbers about stuff, learning about glaciation from lodge stuff. So much learning about life, so many family experiences and memories that we just loved. So many like pictures and like tough hikes where at the end, the kids are like, wow, I'm glad we did that and got to see the waterfall. So amazing time for that week. So glad we're not at school. So glad I didn't work. But then we're driving home at the end of the week and my daughter's starting to get stressed out because she's like, but maybe we did something before, because she'd missed 2 weeks of school, essentially of homework at the time. She's starting to get stressed out. We're like, what are we going to do as we go do this? And we get to the house. You know what? Prior to that, I would get on stage to talk about the 4-Hour Work Week. My two favorite books, The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod and The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. It talks about how to get more done with less. So I sat down with my daughter and said, look, I bet if we just focus for the next couple hours, let's see how much of your homework we can get done. And so we just sat down and we kept doing page after page, and she's doing the work and I'm there whenever she needs me to give her a hint on something or some help. And she keeps going. And a few hours later, we finish all of her homework. And so she's feeling very excited. I'm feeling very excited. I drop her off for school the next day. And instead of her being stressed, she's like, it's fine. I missed the last couple of weeks. It's no big deal. I went to pick her up at the end of that day. And it was like the coolest quote ever, because Maddie, I said, hey, how was your day? And she goes, Dad, you'll never believe it. I'm the only one that got everything done. I'm the only one that knows long division. So part of that stuff we had to do was learning long division for the first time was one of those lessons that they were supposed to be working on, but she got more, but they essentially with class, they didn't get through all the lessons they gave her. So she was so excited that she was ahead. And that's what really sprouted the 5-hour school week. The idea that we think that we could actually get what a normal kid gets done in 8 hours during the day. Our kids could get it done with an hour of focus time. They could learn as much as their friends at school. And the rest of the day, we could spend traveling, going to museums, going to aquariums, just having fun, playing soccer, whatever. And so that's where the 5-hour school week came, that you can get your full week of school done 5 hours a week. And the rest of the time, you can do all that extra stuff. The trips to Yosemite, the learning about glaciation, the going and seeing crocodiles, all the other fun stuff that we really liked learning. And so it's turned into a lot more. We have a book about it. There's so many people that have made it their own thing. The whole idea of the book was while we were doing some of that, people kept reaching out to my wife on social media. What are you doing? Like, how are you traveling so much? What are you really doing with all of this concept? And so I finally told her, like, you just have to put it in a book. You got to write it down. Like all the questions you keep answering for people. And the whole goal was to help inspire others to know there could be another way. Because for us, for the longest way, our kids were unhappy. We were unhappy. And it's just life is tough. You do it the way that you're supposed to. I went to school. You went to school. It was normal. It was hard. We did homework. And then we just want people to know, like, they have options. The 5-hour school weeks really let people know they have options and they can create their own education. Even if it's the 15-hour school week or the 30-hour school week or the 1-hour school week, however they decide to do it, it's just letting people know, like, you don't just have to do it the way they told us we did.
Pure, unedited gasoline right there. Aaron Amuchastegui. I'm sorry, man, but I'm going to have to burden you with my friendship for the rest of our life. I'm so sorry, because now I found my person. She's my girlfriend now, but I know that she's going to be the mother of my children. So we're a couple years out. Then again, everyone that says that, you know what happens. So I'm just winging it. So we'll see when the kids come. But when the kids come, that's going to be exactly my philosophy that I'm thinking. And that's why it's so interesting to me, for someone that doesn't have kids yet, and for people that are listening that don't have kids yet, like, what a cool message that is, so that we can be able to go in and we have options now. Because that's what's cool about our generation coming up right now is, and like kind of the millennials in general, is like, we all started to poke holes in things. We're like, hey, like, it's almost like a running joke where we're like, man, almost everything we learned was completely useless. Like, why didn't we learn how to balance a checkbook? Why didn't we learn how to take out loans? Nobody teaches about student loans. Nobody teaches about
credit card,
house. It's insane.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. And so now it's cool to be able to see that there's a different way. Before we get into the business side, I'm not even going to lie to you. We talked so much that I'm completely off track with time. So feel free to ring me in whenever you want, because normally I have a really good track of time here. I want to talk about the second part of yours, which is Life Hacker. That is infinitely interesting to me. And I know that you are boys with David Osborne, and I had a long conversation with him. We talked a lot about longevity and health and fitness. And so I really like to let you loose there before we get into the nuts and bolts of the business.
Yeah, David and I get to share a lot of fun ideas. And part of it started with when I first all of a sudden went broke and was like, how do I help fix my family? I was working a couple different jobs, and the way that I was doing that was combining the 4-hour work week, doing work for a couple hours in the day before 6 a.m., then taking my kids to school and then go doing other jobs to be able to get it all done. So that miracle morning 4-hour work, I became pretty obsessed with, Tim Ferriss and the stuff that he did. And part of his concept was the idea, the first time I had seen anything that was like a life hacker that was like, hey, if I take this medicine, I function better. If I eat this way, I function better. And so now the world is just an example. So my normal day, right? So I get up early, I ride 30 minutes on my, I've got a bike simulator that I did when I was training for Ironman. I'll ride that for 30 minutes. I'll hit some golf balls. I'll go sit in my infrared sauna for 15, 20 minutes. Really simple stuff. I eat vegan 90% of the time. I've got a cryotherapy machine at my house. So a cryotherapy, the nitrogen got delivered today. I was on a Zoom call and the guy is knocking on my door to deliver nitrogen. The people I was on with you're getting nitrogen delivered right now? What is that? I was no, I have a cryotherapy booth that 3 minutes a day, you go in this thing and it's negative 280 degrees. Now it burns 500 calories when you're in there. It's a very quick process. And it also, I'm a big fan of cryotherapy. So I got into it when I broke my ribs. I broke my ribs playing volleyball out in Austin, Texas, one of the mornings when we were doing it. Super painful experience. You go get in a cryotherapy thing for 3 minutes. You don't feel anything for a few hours. The concept with cryotherapy is your body thinks you're dying. So for 3 minutes, your body thinks you're dying. So it starts releasing all these endorphins because you want to feel better if you're dying. It releases all this adrenaline because if you're dying, your body wants to be ready to battle to try to do, better things to be okay. And then as soon as your body realizes you're not dying, then it starts healing itself. So it starts sending out all the receptors to go say, we got to get ready for battle again. So I do that there's a lot of pills and vitamins that all of us take. And even we've been learning more about it lately from David Sinclair. I've got a stack of them here next to me, but I've got Resveratrol. I've got NMN. I've got this thing called MitoPure, which are mitochondrial revitalizers. And then all your regular vitamins you take. I inject NAD+ every day and I inject B12. And there's a couple other kind of injections that are in there. And I'm 41 years old. I get testosterone injections once a week, but I have more energy today than I had when I was 25 or 30. I'm healthier today. I used to only eat McDonald's every day and things like that. So I've got lots of energy with that. We also go to there's a hyperbaric oxygen chamber about a mile from my house. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that David and I go do. And it's boring. You go sit in this thing for a couple hours and it really turns up the pressure and you breathe out of an oxygen mask you can do work in there on your laptop, but it's one of the only things that they've seen that can measure your telomere length to go in the right direction as if you're reversing aging. So many little things like that. Part of trying to be a life hacker is trying to find things that light you up and how you can be more accomplished at doing them. That could be meal prep. That could be learning to also find things that maybe you didn't think you were going to be skilled at and be I want to be skilled at that too. But so much of life hacking for me is how can I get energy as I feel older? I want to feel younger next year than I feel today because I really like living. And again, tomorrow isn't promised and we spent plenty of time in all of our lives not doing enough. So we want to be able to do as much as we can.
Yeah. And that's fantastic. And that's a huge focus for me now is whenever I started to view it in that perspective, there's one whole thing where you're oh yeah, I want a diet to look good. And it's a miserable process. You feel like crap. Yeah, you end up getting lean. Like I competed in a bodybuilding show and I was just so ungodly lean that it was just miserable for me. But there was a quote and a story from, I think it was Zig Ziglar that said it. And he was like, if you have $100 million racehorse, and this racehorse was the best racehorse that money could buy, and you had that thing going out and it was making all of your money and it was helping you live, and this racehorse was killing it. He's like, what would you feed the racehorse? He goes, you would feed it all the best foods that money could buy. You would give it the best vitamins, the best exercise, everything. He goes, would you feed the racehorse junk? Would you feed it beer? No. Okay, then cool. So you're talking about a fictitious racehorse. Then what are you putting in your body? He's like, you're the best racehorse you're ever going to have. And you can make well over $100 million for yourself. He's like, so what are you doing for your body? And as soon as I started thinking about that from a optimization and a impact standpoint and a significant standpoint, that's when the switch flipped. So that's why that's so interesting to me. So for people listening, Aaron's talking about all these cool things he does because he's got some money now and he's able to do it. And that's one of the reasons why we get wealth and we chase some wealth for these reasons, because you can get an infrared sauna and a cryo chamber. Like that's stuff that I want to get. For people, before we get into the business here, to wrap this up with a bow for this last part, if you could have maybe 3 to 5 resources for somebody listening to this that they could go do today or this week, maybe a book to get or a website or a blog post to read about all this stuff that you're talking about with biohacking, David Sinclair, what would you recommend? Some resources, maybe some diets, something like that.
Yeah. And one of the things you hit on was none of it is to look like,
that's a byproduct,
right? That's the byproduct. It's all to feel better. It was funny. So after I got the cryo machine, I was like 3 or 4 months in a row of just the very simple 30 minute a day exercise, plus the sauna, plus the cryotherapy. My wife saw me walking in one day and she's like, what the heck has been going on? You've lost so much weight. Like your muscle, my body fat's down like 10 or 11%. And she's like, you haven't been doing anything. I'm like, I haven't. It consistency compounds, but it was cool when she noticed and was like, man, I got to start getting in the cryotherapy machine with you. If this stuff's all working, we got to do that. There's a lot of, so one of my favorite resources to listen to is Dave Asprey. A simple thing that you can try to do and achieve right away is like the whole bulletproof coffee morning routine, right? It's like mixing a little bit of butter with protein in your coffees. So Dave Asprey has a book about long life. I forget the name of it, but he's got a podcast about it too. He started Bulletproof Coffee. So that's something that anybody could do. It's like a $10 book. Like
collagen. He's a big collagen guy, isn't he?
Yeah. So it's butter and then collagen protein that you're taking. Makes your joints feel better. He essentially was hiking Everest and it was super sore. And he saw these guys were just eating pure butter. And after he ate the pure butter, his joints started feeling better. If my neck starts feeling funky or my knees or arms are feeling funky, I'm like, oh yeah, I need more butter in my coffee, and it works. So Dave Asprey, his book's maybe 10 or 20 bucks and you could start a bulletproof coffee kind of regimen, something like that. Starting your day with the protein, the collagen to do fat. It helps you burn fat right away during the day by starting your day with protein and collagen and not carbs. It'll help you burn fat and get energy. You could do that. You can add that for like an extra $3 a day to your life. So very inexpensive thing to go get started with. I'd say
for breakfast.
Most of the time, I don't have set times for like intermittent fasting. It just depends on how I feel on it. But yeah, so fasting, I know a lot of people that do really well with fasting. Not one of the things that I do on mine, but I know David Sinclair told us that if we're eating breakfast, we're like killing ourselves, that he said, you should always skip your first meal of the day. So get that resource, get the Miracle Morning book, you know, Hal Elrod, great dude, the great friend of ours. And it really talks about getting up a little bit early. If you wake up a couple hours before you do right now, whatever time you work out, start waking up 2 hours earlier. That may seem ludicrous or crazy if you've never thought about that. But during that 2 hours, you can do all the things you don't have time to do to focus on the health, to get the extra exercise in, to read, to meditate. And when I first started signing up for Ironman stuff, like that was the secret to it. Waking up early and doing the things when everyone else is asleep, then there's no excuse to not have the time to do it. And then the newer stuff, the NMN, the NAD, the injections, that's all. I've been doing that 4 or 5 months. That's fairly new. And David Sinclair has a book. It's like Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. And so it's still pretty new stuff, but his studies on it, I like it in there. There's a page that says, here's the vitamins to take. Those are like a couple hundred dollars a month for most of those supplements to start adding. And the sooner you do, the better. But Dave Asprey's book and David Sinclair both talk about, first it talks about here how you can slow aging and then how you can reverse aging. And for me, it's not even really the aging idea, but I did get a bunch of us got blood tests taken recently where they take your stats to say what your inner age is compared to your outer age. And I did it with a lot of the GoBundance guys, like 15 of us all got the test, and they do your blood testing and they measure all these things and say, all right, you're actually 41. So mine came back. You're 41, but your body says you're 30. So everybody else had like 2 or 3 years difference. And some of them were in the reverse order. And I had by far the biggest delta in that. And it was pretty cool, but really in it, I don't drink alcohol too. So that's a bummer for a lot of you guys. It's like, that'd be a really boring thing to say. I don't want to live longer if I can't drink, but that's, I think, one of the things that made my stats a lot different, but really inexpensive resources. Start with Dave Asprey, start with David Sinclair, start with vitamins, do vitamins every day, wake up early and get into a small routine. Those small routines, you do them every day, add up really quick.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great to know. Unfortunately, I do drink, and it's dude, and it sucks. Now, granted, yeah, now I'm pushing away from it a little bit. So it's like I say that as I just left Brazil, where the entire culture is drinking with every single meal. So I'm still feeling the effects of that. But yeah, definitely post call, I was able to make those shifts relatively quickly, and I'm going to go to the gym immediately after this. So that's something that's baked in. Yeah, appreciate all that advice. That's all stuff that we could actionably take today. I'm going to put everything that he said in the show notes for you listening so that we could be able to focus on that. So I want to be able to wrap this up talking about actually going to the courthouse steps and what you did there, and maybe do a super segment on this to where we could talk about the principles behind it and resources behind it for someone that hears it and they're like, oh, cool, I want to apply that now. How can I do that? So can you talk a little bit about your story about buying at auction at the courthouse steps and then go into the finances here a little bit?
Yeah. So when I started doing that, I didn't have any money. I had to find investors to do it. So what happens if someone buys a house, most of them get a loan to do it. Mm-hmm. And then if they stop making their payment, it goes into this kind of system where they get a notice that says, hey, you haven't made your payment. And the way the law works in a lot of non-judicial states, so that's California, Texas, Arizona, Colorado, there's a bunch of them, where it says, if you don't make your payment, we're going to take it to a public auction. We're going to start at like the note amount. So if you owe $300,000 on your house, it goes for $300,000. If nobody buys it, then the bank gets the house back and it becomes a bank-owned REO. But also, like the little known secret, and really in the 80s and 90s, nobody bid on those auctions. They all went back to the bank for REOs. It's like a little known secret that they actually took them to market. In 2005, 2006, no one was getting foreclosed on because the market was huge. In 2007, foreclosure started to happen like crazy, like 2007, 2008, 2009, but nobody knew how the system actually worked. All these guys that have been doing foreclosures for the last 10 years, there was only a few people in the business that were doing it that realized you could buy at that point. The very first auction I went to, there was 3 other guys there and 50 houses sold that day. Mm-hmm. So between the 3 guys, we could choose which houses we wanted, how many we wanted to get on. Like, you bid against each other on the good ones, but people would run out of money and get to go through that process. Sometimes when you're buying a foreclosure, it's a really nice house. You knock on the door, the people were living in it, they were keeping it nice and clean. And you say, I buy the house, and they go, okay, I'll move out. Sorry, I didn't know when this was going to happen. Some people are going to be mad and they're going to yell at you and they're going to pour concrete down their toilets and they're going to break stuff. And sometimes they're going to be vacant and super nice, and sometimes they're going to be vacant and trashed. So in order to buy a house like this at foreclosure, you're trying to make a whole bunch of guesses to see, how much can I sell it for? What will it cost me to fix it up? Mm-hmm. And so how much profit do I want? So how much can I bid? I've got a book I wrote called Bidding to Buy. It got published by Bigger Pockets. Again, another cheap book. It's like $10. I get paid like 50 cents every time you buy one. So it's not a pitch for that. It is a quick 3-hour read though, where you can learn all sorts of ways to analyze, like, how to buy foreclosures, how to go through the business. There's less foreclosures right now, but it's the same concepts out there for if you're trying to make quick money in real estate, you're trying to buy a house for less than it's worth and fix it and sell it, or fix it and rent it. And so now a lot of what we're doing. So at that time I had no money. I went to other people and I started like saying, what would auction be like? I did test runs. Oh, I could have bought this house for this. I could have fixed it for this. This is what it sold for. And then I went to investors and said, my first investor was my dad. And I said, hey, I won't charge you any money. Let me see if this works. And he made money on the first house. He made money on the second house. Then I started saying, hey, can I get 25% of the profit now? Eventually, I started getting 50% of the profit. And then eventually I started having lenders do it. With converting it to rentals, and the only reason I'm trying to jump through that really quick, Brian, is I know we've been talking for a while already. And so there's some other resource out there, but Courthouse Step is, it's awesome, awesome stuff. And the more, but it really, it sounds complicated, but it's all about systems. It's scary because you're like, I need to drive by the house. I need to check title. I need to see what it's worth. I need to do all these steps. But if you just follow the steps of the checklist, it's a very easy, it's a very simple process. It's not easy. You have to do all the steps, but it's very simple. And if you follow this, if you follow the simple steps and you're willing to work hard, you can make a lot of money in it. The other idea of if you're buying a house for $80,000 that's worth $100,000, then those become really good rentals, because then what can happen in theory is you buy it, you put a renter in it, and 6 months later, when you go get a loan, it's going to, even if you get no appreciation, today we're getting crazy appreciation. If you get no appreciation and 6 months after you've had a renter in it for a while, you'll get a loan, you get an $80,000 loan on it. That means you pull back your money or you pay your investor back their money. And now you own the house and you make $100 a month forever on. And that's all I started doing in 2015. I tried to do that with as many as I could. That with hundreds and hundreds of houses, we're like 800 houses or something now. And it'll end up paying off in the long run. So I love real estate for that reason. Real estate over the past couple of years has gotten even crazier. My favorite like hack for somebody right now, if they're thinking about getting into foreclosures and buying direct from owners, you can door knock vacant houses. You can see who stopped mowing their lawn. You can go to the city and see who isn't paying their water bill and see these lien notices. Those are people that haven't stopped making their mortgages yet, but they're in trouble, right? So you can use those techniques to buy from them. My favorite thing right now is actually buying new construction, because you can buy new construction while it's under construction. You can go, I had a bunch of them this last year, but it's a very simple example, $170,000 townhome for sale. We go, we get under contract on it. We give them a $3,000 deposit on this condo. It takes 7 months to finish. Every month they're like, hey, we're getting delays from breakers and things like that. We close on it in September for $170,000. And that's, so I get a hard money loan on it, 100% financing, 12% interest, $179,000 house. The same day I tell the realtor that was the listing agent on it to go ahead and relist it. And she relists it for $219,000. Right. So because we've had this crazy year. So if at the day I closed on it, if it had lost value or it sucked or I couldn't get a loan, I would have been out that $2,000 or $3,000 deposit. But the day I bought it, she goes and lists it for $219,000. I don't remember if I got $210,000 or $215,000 or something like that. But then I was able to sell that one. I owned it for 30 days with that very, like, I know it sounds get rich quick. Real estate right now is very opportunistic. It does feel like we've got another year of this crazy appreciation. I don't think people should go buy cash today, hoping for appreciation later, but there's a lot of these ways to almost buy options on real estate where you can put down deposits with long escrows and see if you actually get some appreciation in 3 to 6 months before you actually close on it. Because it's even easier if you're going to close on it for $179,000 tomorrow and now it's appraising at $215,000, $220,000. It'll be way easier to get a lender or a friend to say, hey, can you loan me the money? Look, it appraised for $219,000. I just need to close it for $179,000. We'll sell it tomorrow and I'll pay you $5,000 interest or something like that. So I love real estate as a way to do some really boring stuff like nice singles. The last 5 years, I've been hitting singles. No high risk stuff. Buying a house, it's going to cash flow. It's a rental. Buying a house, writing offers on this new construction. But by the time I close, because it takes 6 to 9 months, we're seeing this huge appreciation when we're buying it. We already have the built-in equity. I think we've got another year of the market being like this. I think there's a lot of ways to do really boring singles. And then every once in a while, like we saw in 2020 and 2021, our boring houses that were never supposed to gain in value have done really well. So it's real estate can make, I would say, I'm not a really great business person. I'm not really great at running teams or having a bunch of employees. I own some companies too that are more traditional. Those aren't as successful as our real estate ones. But real estate, you don't have to be very smart and you can do really well at it if you just learn the principles and those simple tactics to stay safe.
Yeah. And then just rinse, repeat, follow what your mentors did, stay in your lane, stop trying to zigzag, stick to your thing, rock and roll.
Dude, everything Brian just said, like I've done these other deals, I've done I recently bought a new construction apartment complex. That's exciting for me. That's probably the difference, the biggest change of not staying in my lane, because the single family rentals are like the ones where when I focus on those, I know them inside and out. And I know if I keep doing them, I'll succeed at them. When I try to get into this other stuff, like I put on the goal, it's, I want to buy a commercial. I want to buy industrial. I don't know anything about that stuff. And the reason I want to do that is maybe boredom or maybe jealousy that other people are growing faster. But if you just stay in your lane with a very simple thing, real estate can be really lucrative right now. And I'm sure there's lots of other businesses like that are even crypto and things like that. You know what you're doing. You stay in your lane, stay focused, and learn from people.
So as we finish up this last year or two, I agree with you. Obviously, I think they're going to start raising rates and hiking rates. That's going to be the obvious move by the Fed here soon. But as we are moving into this next market cycle, I actually just talked to Cushman this last week, and he was talking about market cycles. And yeah, we're teetering at the of one right now. But his argument is you could also make the argument that it's actually forced a new cycle, and that we're going into it now just because of what the federal government did with the stimulus. But what do you see on the horizon? Is this something that you're going to still continue doing? Is the courthouse steps, buying at auction, is this something that you're going to keep doing moving forward, making these plays on this, like appreciation plays and making bets on this? Or what do you start doing once the tide starts turning and we start going a different direction? Do you have a game plan then, or are we just going to adjust and pivot when the time comes?
Andrew Cushman is a brilliant guy. I really like him. We published 150 podcasts in 2021, and we just released our top 10, and the interview I did with him where we just talked about stats and where we tried to predict the future was in our top 10 of most downloaded podcasts. Yep. So I would say anybody that's listening to this that hasn't listened to, did you interview Cushman on the show?
Oh, I interviewed Cushman on the show.
Oh yeah. So go back and listen to that one. If you're listening to mine, go back and listen to Cushman's again. I'm going to go listen to that one because I think, so every year I try to say, what does it look like 12 months from now?
Always.
And I think that 12 months from now, based on the statistics of demand and supply, very simple econ stuff, maybe some of the only stuff I learned in high school and college that really applies today. Yep. Is econ supply demand curve stuff. I think prices are going to be worth more a year from now, period. I think a lot of that is probably this new cycle that was created. I think we're just getting started. I would also I'm not going to bet that 5 years from now prices are worth way more, but I think that prices will be worth, I think we're just getting started in this new cycle. The way that I will bet though is based on what I think 12 months from now, because I could be wrong about 2 years from now, 3 years from now, but by looking at the stats, I think the next 12 months, we're going to have some increase. So I'm going to go as big as I can while I can. One of the things I've learned in the last 10 years is you've got cycles of opportunities and cycles of not. I've had three times since 2005 where I had really huge opportunities. The first two, I wish I would have gone bigger. In 2009, I wish I would have found more lenders, bought more houses, done more things. In 2012, I wish I would have done the same thing. In 2020, I told my wife at the time, I was like, all right, so we've had these other chances where we looked back and said, this is one of those new cycles, one of those new times. I don't know how long this is going to last, but now we have an infinite amount of people that want to invest in us, an infinite amount of lenders. We're going to go as absolutely big as we can for as long as this cycle goes. So I won't have to look back. Now that, so for me, that means like, I'm going to push really, I bought more houses last year than I had any of the few years prior in 2020 and 2021. I'll do the same thing this year because I believe that's going to happen. As soon as that slows down, man, I hope that I can just now have the reserve and the calmness to go, all right, cool. Now we're going to go back to 5-hour school week model for the next few years and just travel again. Because 2017 to 2019, I didn't work very much. I didn't have anything to go big on. It was kind of like we were buying each month, but it was nice and boring. The last year or two has been like, go as big as we can, as many as we can. So I think it's cyclical. I think we got a big opportunity right now to go for it. And I'm hoping that, yeah, if the opportunity starts to dry up, I hope I'm smart enough to say, all right, let's just go travel the world, go to Africa, go do something else instead of trying to fit it. When I've tried to fit like that square peg in a round hole, when I've tried to make myself successful at a time when the opportunity isn't huge, I've really beat my head against the wall. I've spent time doing things I shouldn't and losing money. The times I've done the best was like, it's just obvious. When opportunities knock, they knock. And when that happens, you should just go really big. No matter what, we'll have another two or three times in our lifetime where huge opportunities will happen. So I'll just hopefully be patient till the next one.
Yeah, going inch wide and a mile deep.
Yeah.
Yep. I love it.
I like it.
Man, this has been it's been an awesome show because, man, you've got so many different angles and so many different areas of like zones of genius. That's just, I listen to you on podcasts and I'm like, this is cool. But if I just talked to you about real estate today, that would be boring to me. Like, you've got so much more to offer. That's why I like doing these shows. And yeah. Now everyone can leave this. And it's like my overall goal for the show. It's you don't want to be a jack of all trades, master of none. But the goal for the show is every single episode, I want to be able to give people the tools, the financial tools, to be able to be 1% better listening to this episode financially than they were before. They have one more tool to use. And then also they have one more idea that they can take about how to tweak their life so that while they're building their journey and while they're building their business and going on this path, they can do it the right way instead of just hustling their ass off and saving all of their money. And all of a sudden you look up and you're 50 and you've got all this money and you've got all these savings, but you didn't do it the right way. And now your kids hate you. You're divorced 4 times. So what did you accomplish? So if we can accomplish those two things, that's a freaking win. And I think this episode was a win today, buddy. We killed it.
I want to do one final thought for it, man. I think what you're doing here is awesome. I think if there was one message I could give anybody out of there is that it's the know your why. So people say, I want to be rich, right? Simply, I wanted to build a business. I wanted to make as much money as I could, but why did I want to do that? If I had known my why in 2005, 2009, that sort of stuff, then in 2000, I didn't even go into the fact I went to prison, you know, when I was 20 also for a couple of years. And so I had all these things that like jump started, but if I would have known why I wanted to get rich, then when the money would have started coming in, I would have been smarter with it. I'd have been more careful with it. It'd have been smart. I didn't even think about what would happen if it really turned out. And then now in life, focusing on that why helps us stay like, I want to spend a lot of time with my family. Like people go, I want to be rich because I want to spend a lot of time with my family. And then sometimes the opportunity happens where you stop spending time with your family. So know your why. If you want to be rich, why do you want to be rich? And try to see how much of that stuff you can do now. And just keep your eye on that the whole time. Your why should always be front and center when you're super successful, when you're not successful, when you're trying to grow. And if you always know this is why I want to do great, then you'll make better decisions along the way. So this was super fun, Brian.
And the economics will go even further. The wealth comes even faster whenever you're having fun with it. I've literally this last year on paper, like my vertical income, like what took a hit because I quit jobs, went to other jobs, quit those jobs, but I still love the ride along the way. And I accidentally tripled my net worth. Whoops. Come on. Buy assets. Do. Come on, everyone listening. Just listen to what Aaron says. Don't listen to me.
we're super lucky guys, Brian, but for your listeners, thanks for listening. I hope you guys found it interesting today.
Yes. And then Aaron, where can people find you and list the resources and the podcast?
Yeah. So the best way to talk to me is on Instagram. I got a unique name, Aaron Amuchastegui. So at Aaron Amuchastegui, and just go find me on there. Ask me about stuff. I have a podcast called the Real Estate Rockstars Podcast. It has its own Instagram. It's high, but if you like Google Real Estate Rockstars Podcast, I think you'll find it's the largest podcast in the US for real estate agents. And I released 8 to 10 a month of those where I interview people. We talk about real estate news. I've got several software companies on how people can find assets. I've got foreclosure listings in Texas and things like that. My Bidding to Buy book is a great one. You can find that on Bigger Pockets, the 5-hour school week, finding my wife on Instagram, or go buy that book. Again, it's a quick read and it's pretty, you know, encouraging. But anything that's important to me, man, find me on social media. We'll talk about it more. And if I forgot to list one of those resources, you message me, I'll find it for you.
Boom. And I'm going to put all this in the show notes and you could be able to just scroll on down after you leave us that 5-star rating and a review and you go leave a Real Estate Rockstars a 5-star review. You could scroll down and go buy the books, man. Buy the books. Roll with it.
Buy the books. Give the reviews. Go listen to Real Estate. That's more important than listening sometimes. Give the reviews.
You want the sun to shine brighter on you. You want the birds to sing in the morning. Go leave us a review. Anyways, brother, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on. And this is Brian Lubin and Aaron Amuchastegui signing off.
You've been listening to the Action Academy podcast, helping you to choose what you want, with who you want, when you want.
You've been given the gift of freedom. Don't turn your back on that.
We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some practical and useful information. Make sure to like, rate, and review the show. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hook up with us on social media. Remember, financial independence is freedom.
The flags of freedom fly. Freedom fly.